Happy New Year, everyone. It's good to see you all made it through 2020 relatively unscathed. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back to another episode. Today I'm going to be sharing creepy and allegedly true New Year's horror stories from viewers just like you. If you have a story that you'd like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy and allegedly true New Year's horror stories. This is something scary that happened to me on New Year's Eve of 2013. That night, I accompanied a few friends to a restaurant and club downtown for a New Year's party. I had been feeling a little under the weather all day, but met them at the club regardless. Around 15 till midnight, I couldn't kid myself any longer and let them know I was heading home. The parking lot was very dark, so I pulled a small flashlight out that I carried with me. I usually kept it in my pocket and used it to light my path. As I turned the corner of the building, I caught notice of noise off to my left between two parked cars. When I reached the area, I shone my light onto the location of the noise and saw a man crouched over on the ground. I asked him if he needed any help with something, partly from suspicion, and he said yes. He claimed he had dropped his keys and could not find them in the dark, and asked if I could shine my light over to where he was to help them. Everything about the situation seemed legit, so I put my fears aside and began helping him. I crouched down next to him while he searched the area under the car. A few minutes passed and we were unable to locate the keys. Switching places with the man, I aimed the beam further and under the car. Doing this caused me to lean down further than I had to at that point. This is when I felt a hard crack against the back of my head. I remember the feeling of my face hitting the pavement, but that was all for a moment. I was probably only unconscious for a few seconds because I began waking up while I was being flipped over on my back. When my eyes opened, I saw a guy I did not recognize going through my pockets. He just pulled my wallet out of my back pocket and handed it to the other guy, the one I had been helping. Then, I watched as he pulled out my pocket knife out of my front right pocket and flicked it open. It had one of those assisted openings that makes it a little bit easier to open up real quick, kind of like a switchblade. He began waving it around in my face and asked me what my plans were for it. It was not a big knife or anything. The blade was maybe 3 inches long, and I carried it to use as a daily tool, like opening boxes at work and stuff like that. I had never viewed it as a real weapon until that moment. It was not big, but it was sharp enough to cut my throat. I could not say anything back to him. Even though I was now fully awake, I was too afraid to do anything. He continued waving it around and laughing. Fortunately for me, a group of men and women had just arrived and noticed what was going on. One of the men yelled out, "Hey, what are you dudes doing to him?" They must have been afraid of the number of people in the group and ran off down the street. A couple of the guys checked me out to make sure I was okay while the others called 911. The first responders arrived a few minutes later, and I went to the ER in the meat wagon. I was happy to hear I only had a slight concussion and would be allowed to go home later that morning. A female in the group had been kind enough to go into the club and tell my friends what had happened, and they arrived soon after I did. They cut me loose with nothing more than a headache. A few hours later, I got a ride home. I only spoke to the police briefly that night to give them a report, but it was not until the following day when I got any information. My knife had been found across the parking lot from where I had been assaulted, but I never got it back because it was quote-unquote evidence in an open investigation. They had also found my wallet down the street from the club, but nothing was in it. The iPhone I was carrying at the time never surfaced, but I had insurance on it and got another one. I still have no idea where the flashlight went to, and the two guys that assaulted me still have not been found, and I do not expect they ever will be. The incident had me pretty messed up for a few years, but I eventually realized I was still alive, and that was the most important thing. Despite this, I will probably never be able to come to the assistance of another person I do not know without being very afraid. Just to be safe, I think I will mind my own business from now on. Better safe than sorry, you know? One little phone call can change a life. But for Karen Faulkner, three telephone calls changed her life in a way she will never, ever forget. Two of the three were made within just a couple of hours of each other on the 1st of January, 1993. The first was from her mother, informing her that her older sister had gone missing after celebrating at a New Year's Eve party. The second was even worse news. The call came from her father, telling her a body had been found. Karen's sister, Kimberly, had been murdered. Over the next 18 years, Karen and the Faulkner family had grieved, come to terms with their loss, and eventually put it behind them. Until one fateful day, when the phone rang. The story of Kimberly Jean Duncan's murder is as random as it is horrific. She was a young woman, just 30 years of age. She was married with two young children in Aloha, Northeast Portland. She and her husband had been invited to a New Year's party. However, Duncan went alone because her husband had picked up a back injury and was immobilized with extreme pain. But as the night crawled into the wee hours of the morning, Kimberly had failed to arrive long after she was due to arrive home. Naturally, her husband began to grow irritated. It was not unusual for her to be a little bit late, due to drunken revelry and whatnot, but after hours and hours of unexplained absence, her husband went from irritable to downright worried. He grabbed his cell phone and began to call a few mutual friends who he knew would also be at the party. Eventually one answered, but his question on his wife's whereabouts were met with confusion. She had left the party hours before, sober as a judge, to get home for the time she had promised. Meanwhile, a stationary vehicle was spotted by a member of the public, parked in a neighborhood not too far from where Kim had been attending the New Year's Eve party. Initially, the person who spotted it guessed that the figure that lay motionless behind the steering wheel was just too drunk to drive and decided to sleep it off. But when the car was still there the following morning, they called the police. When the cops arrived, they discovered the slumped figure was dead. They had been shot once in the head at close range. Officers fished around the vehicle for some form of ID. When they found some, the name on the card was Kimberly Jean Duncan. After an impromptu autopsy, Karen Faulkner learned that her recently deceased sister had traces of narcotics in her bloodstream. This led local police to theorize that she could have been involved with violent drug dealers. That fact left Karen highly conflicted. Given that Kim had dabbled with drugs in high school, even struggled with addiction at one point, but had recently been telling her family that she was clean and sober. Despite her troubled past, Karen figured the best way to honor her sister would be to keep her memory alive. She needed to figure out what happened to her, and more importantly, who killed her. But when she called the cold case homicide unit to find out where the case stood, she discovered they had absolutely nothing. They also had a caseload of 273 investigations, with just 3 full-time detectives. Karen could do the math. They were hideously overloaded with work. Months later, Karen called again. Same status. She called again. Within the unit, she became known as a bit of a pest. On one call, however, she reached a detective newly assigned to cold cases. He told Karen to call whenever she wanted, and he would keep her informed of any developments. This kind of personal touch meant a lot to her. Her sister had been a living, breathing person, not an item that had been stolen or a piece of property that had been damaged. It was during one of these conversations with the new officer that she learned about a certain deck of playing cards. The unit sergeant had just come back from a national police convention, where he had learned that some police agencies were using the cards to solve cold case murders. Each card featured the victim's face, some details, and a number to call. The cards were distributed to jails and prisons with the hopes that an inmate might remember something. Faulkner made it her mission to get her sister's case on one of those 52 cards. She called, and she pestered, and she called again. When the first deck of cards was placed in Oregon's institutions, Duncan's case was featured on the 10 of Diamonds. 2 years later, an inmate was playing cards in Oregon Penitentiary. This inmate held the 10 of Diamonds in his hand. He read about the case, and by pure coincidence, something about it sounded strangely familiar to him. If he could provide the authorities with pertinent information, it could be a bargaining chip on his case. Authorities agreed to work with him. On pretense, they moved the man to a hospital, had him wear an undercover wire, and listened as he called his old friend to come see him. In the hospital room, he got his friend to talk about the case. Days later, authorities made an arrest. That is when Karen Faulkner received the third phone call. On the 15th of June 2010, Karen was driving on the freeway when her cell phone rang. The cold case detective told her to get her family together and come right away. "We walked into a room and everyone was standing and waiting for us," she said. The original detective who had worked the case was retired, but he was there. He had tears in his eyes. The family was told at 8:20 a.m. that very morning, authorities had arrested Brad Richard Ballantyne, a 37-year-old, in connection with the murder. More than a year later, on Thursday, July 7th, Ballantyne pleaded guilty. The family knew who, but not why. Before sentencing, Ballantyne agreed to meet with the family in a jury room on the fifth floor of the Multnomah County Courthouse. "After all these years, we had the chance to confront him," Faulkner said. "He said he had seen my sister at the store when she was leaving after getting some cigarettes. She pulled something out of her pocket, and some money fell on the ground. He wanted to rob her. Brad Ballantyne wanted to get her out of sight, so he flirted with her and asked her to get in her car and followed him up the street. She was probably drunk," Faulkner said. "So, she did. Ballantyne parked his car in front of hers. He came back to Duncan's car. He said she got mad," Faulkner related. "I think she must have realized something was wrong. He said she was disrespectful. He walked back to his car and got a gun. He came back and shot her. He fled with $68. I'll tell you what I'll never forget," Faulkner said. "He told us she never saw it coming." Karen's father died a year later. Her mother is still alive. "I wanted my parents to know what happened to their daughter," Karen had said. "I wanted them to know the killer had been caught. She'd be proud of me," Faulkner said, admitting she still thinks of her sister often. "She would have been as tenacious as I was if it had been the other way around." This happened on New Year's Eve 2016 in Ixtapa, Mexico. My family and I go there every year to spend the holidays since we own an apartment there, and it allows my dad to escape his work environment for a little bit. The apartment we own is an apartment complex that has 24 in total, divided into four towers. They all look the same and have a small terrace with a small hot tub in the corner. Since we have owned that apartment for a few years, my parents became close with a lot of the other residents, which created a nice environment to be during the holidays. Anyway, on New Year's Eve, we were invited with many of the other residents to spend New Year's at one of their apartments. Around 35 people or so showed up, if I had to guess. The apartment is on the fourth floor of the building, and we arrived there at around 10 p.m., since many of us had had dinner before with my family and joined to celebrate the New Year for the rest of the night. At around 10:50 or 11 p.m., one of my mother's friends looked up to the sky and said she saw something rather strange. Many of the residents, myself included, shrugged it off at first and kept on talking. Within just a couple of minutes, though, more and more people started looking up. Once we saw the commotion, we got up and went outside to the terrace to join them and see what the fuss was all about. It was kind of strange at first, but I can describe it as if the stars were twinkling. We could see stars, but these were bunched up closer than usual, and they were twinkling intermittently in an unusual fashion. As we kept looking more and more, these stars kept showing up and twinkling. Some were just saying that they were stars, and we were staring at nothing. But that's when we saw the stars begin to move in the sky. They weren't just twinkling now. They were moving all about. At this point, we all started to freak out a little bit. I like to think we are not alone, and that there are paranormal forces out there, but this was truly the first time I had no idea what was going on, or what I was witnessing. There were too many to count, but we all agreed there was around 100 to 150 quote-unquote stars that were twinkling and moving in one section of the sky. It was like they were all joining together, and once they stopped, they continued to twinkle in an unnatural way. I just can't explain it. It's as if it was turning lights on and off, and not the slight dimness you would see when it's an actual star. Then this entire cluster moved across the sky and disappeared. We were all just staring with our mouths wide open. Many of us tried to record or take pictures, but nothing shows up on the phone cameras, especially that far away. The fact that it was 35 or so people witnessing it, and only about an hour after we got there, means that we definitely saw what we saw. No one was intoxicated to the point to where they could have imagined it. The most interesting part is that the son of the apartment owner said that the year before he talked to a guy that said he had seen something similar on New Year's Eve the year before. He said he listened to the story but shrugged it off as some guy ranting. My family and I continue to talk about it to this day. We immediately tried to investigate phenomena or events that could have caused it, and nothing has come up so far. I'm not sure if anybody listening to this show has any information on this, but I'd love to share it anyway and see if somebody could provide some type of insight. Sorry for the long story, but that was the most concise way I could explain it. I know some people say these stories are true for immersion, but believe me when I say this is 100% true. Three of my friends and I were spending the night together on New Year's Eve about a year ago, and we decided we wanted to spend the night in a tent outside, really close to the woods. We were laughing and messing around, you know, normal teenage things. Then, we heard this rustling outside in the leaves. Figuring it was just an animal or something, we shrugged it off. At this point, it was nearing midnight, and we had a flashlight on in the tent and we were blasting music. That is when all hell broke loose. We heard this chirping noise outside. When I say chirping, I do not mean it sounded like a bird or a raccoon, but this unearthly chirping that did not sound like any animal at all. In fear, we were about to be ambushed. I demanded my friends temporarily turn off the lights and the music. At first, they looked at me like I was crazy, but I strengthened my tone. Turn it all off, now! At this point, they knew I was serious, so they turned it all off and listened. There it was again, this unearthly chirping that did not sound like anything. My friends and I were dropping bricks, but I was a little bit braver than the rest of them. I had been taking karate for about 4 years, and I am a very tall female capable of taking down a grown man. So I figured I could take whatever was out there, or at least I could carry one of my friends if we had to run away. They all tried to play it cool and said it must have been one of those screamer firework things, but I could tell they were all soiling themselves. We carried on screwing around for a few more minutes, desperately trying to forget about the screech chirping thing outside. Then we heard it again. This time, though, much closer to our tent. This was the first time I could properly hear it. When it made a clearer sound, reality drop-kicked me in the stomach. It was big, and it was almost right outside of our tent. My friends and I were about to freak out. So, they started asking me questions as to what I thought it was. I was the friend who was into all things paranormal, and I guess you could still say I am. But I have never been a paranoid person. So, they asked me. I told them, just as a suggestion, that it could be a skimwalker or a fleshgate, because I read somewhere that they like to mock the voices of your friends and like to emit strange noises. I only said this because I thought that might help them get over the scream chirp thing, but I think they were really scared. We heard it again. At this point, everyone was dropping bricks again, and one of them eventually called her older brother to come and hang out with us for a while. While he was there, just our luck, we could not hear the chirp screech anymore. Of course. We hung out with him for a while until we all decided to go on a walk with him. The walk was fun, and my friends were terrified because we were walking around in the pitch black. Oddly, maybe this is strange on my part, but I have always liked the dark. As it was so vast and mysterious, I was also low-key hoping we would find the flesh gate so my friends would stop acting like stuck-up little turds that weren't quote-unquote scared because I could see they were crapping themselves. Part of me was also pretty scared to see what would happen if we stumbled across a flesh gate. But her older brother had a knife with him, and I was prepared to stab it if he were not. Fast forward into the night. We were blasting music again and playing with a multicolored strobe light. Probably not the best way to avoid being jumped in the middle of the night. Now that I think about it, it was probably downright stupid to have it at all. My friend's brother had left us his knife in case we heard anything strange that night. It made us feel more comfortable. My friends all decided that I was the only one who would be brave enough to stab someone or something if it came down to it. So I oversaw holding the 6-inch knife all night. Thankfully, it was in a sheath, because despite my training, I am quite clumsy, especially this late into the night. I could not help taking the knife out of the sheath because it was so interesting and absolutely beautiful. There it was again. The same chirp screech. I unzipped the tent to look, knife drawn, and heard something scurry away quickly into the woods. Since my friends did not hear it, I left it alone and said nothing. Everything was fine for the rest of the night. That is, until I was the only one awake. I heard this horrible scream howl, much more blood-curdling than the chirps. It kept getting closer to the tent, and then backing away like it somehow knew I was the only one awake. It circled us, made itself sound more distant than it really was, then came back with another howl. One of my friends briefly awoke and told me it was probably someone having a party, but I could tell she was just saying that so she could get to sleep. Me, however, I could go for 3 days straight without having to sleep. I was perfectly fine without sleep unless I had a long day of school the next day or something. Believe me, when I say I did not let my guard down once, I listened to this thing in the location the cries took place. I was not about to let some flesh gate or whatever this thing was come and kill my friends and me on a night that was supposed to be fun. It's New Year's. We're not supposed to be scared, we're supposed to have fun. I drew the knife a few times and practiced slashing the air in case it attacked. But luckily, it never did. The thing just spent hours taunting me, trying to draw me out. I was incredibly tempted to run out there just to get a look at it, but I knew that is exactly what it wanted. Wanting for me to not be in a group so it could pick me off. There was no way, in frozen hell, I would let it anywhere near my friends. The older brother had left to go to a friend's house later that night as well, and the friend we were all staying with lived with her grandma. There was no strong men around. I lived around the neighborhood and both my mom and dad were home. My dad is a big guy, standing at 6'2", and strong as hell, but it would be too far to run. I could not go out there to see what it was, even if I wanted to. Even though I am fast, I was weak considering how late it was, and I would become this thing's prey easily. Knowing this, I just laid back knife at the ready, listening in absolute horror. You do not know what true vulnerability is until you are on the outskirts of the woods in a tent with three lives in your hands while some paranormal creature is hunting you, teasing you, and you only have one close combat weapon that you are not even certain will put a scratch on it. I sat there in silence until around 6 in the morning when I was certain that it had stopped. I could not take it anymore. The thing had driven me absolutely insane. My work there was done, and I was certain it was gone. I left the knife on my pillow and a note that said I went home. I was not dead, so I could reassure my friends when they woke up later. I began to walk to my house, and to my house the streets were poorly illuminated by street lamps. There were not that many, leaving a ton of dark spaces that I could not see even if I tried. To make matters 10 times worse, my glasses were smudged, and I could barely see a thing out of them. I knew it was better to my advantage if I kept them on, though, because I am blind as a bat. I scanned my surroundings my whole way there, keeping my eyes on every direction this thing could attack from. The thing was probably just waiting to get me alone, but I was not going to let it do anything to me. When I finally got to my house, the door was unlocked to my relief, so I could get in without my parents hearing me. Unfortunately, this was 5 in the morning, and as I mentioned before, clumsy as ever, I bumped into everything as I tried to navigate myself to my room, where I forced myself to go to sleep. After that, when asked, my friends would say it was a screamer firework or some animal, but I can tell they were just too scared to really face the reality. I tried to make sense of it, but I just could not. I knew what I heard, and I knew it was much worse than they could have imagined. They probably thought I mentioned flesh gates and skinwalkers just to scare them, but I honestly believe it was one of the two. Nothing like this has ever happened to me again, but there is a reason we have not been sleeping outside for quite a long time. Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true New Year's horror stories. These were some creepy ones, my friends. I appreciate you sending them in. As always, if you have a story you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going on a daily basis. Now, if you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're listening on iTunes or another platform, be sure to give me a 5-star rating, as that also helps me out a lot. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and make sure you turn on notifications to never miss a new video. I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you're on the go and you don't have YouTube Premium, but still want to listen to all your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories wherever you go, you can download them absolutely free from iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. And like I said, it's absolutely free and always will be. If you would like to support the Swamp outside of hitting that like button and subscribing, maybe check out the merch store. Currently, I have t-shirts, face masks, hoodies, and much more for sale. It helps the swamp out a lot. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the swamp the way you do. I couldn't do this on a daily basis without you guys. Happy New Year's, be safe, don't party too hard, and remember, there's some scary stuff out there. Just be safe. See you guys soon with another creepy video.